My guest this week is Dr. Julio Carrion. He is an associate professor of political science and international relations at the University of Delaware, where he has been specializing in Latin American and comparative politics. His research focus recently has been on mass support for authoritarian alternatives in Latin America. I'm sitting down with him on March 15th to talk about the recent passing of Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez after 14 years in power. Dr. Carrion, welcome to Arsenal for Democracy, and thank you for being here.
Thank you for inviting me.
So I guess as my first question, I would say that President Hugo Chavez was, like many prominent world leaders, a pretty complicated figure. And a lot of the coverage here in the United States of his passing seems to have kind of divided into this polarized good-evil framing. And Chris Hayes on MSNBC recently did a segment where he was pointing that out and saying that that's probably oversimplified for any leader, but it's especially true for someone like President Chavez, who I would argue loomed kind of larger than life in both Venezuela right. and here in the United States and on the world stage in general. So the first question is, what, in your opinion, would be seen as his greatest positive achievement or legacy, and what would be seen as his greatest failing or negative legacy?
So let's start with a positive. I think that he will be remembered as the Latin American president that in recent memory changed the terms of the political debate in the region and set the agenda. Even though beforehand there had been a preoccupation with issues of social inequality and income redistribution, his rhetoric in favor of the poor and his efforts to have regional leadership set him apart from other presidents and to a certain extent change the terms of the debate. I think that will be his most positive legacy. The negative legacy will be associated with how he wanted to actually deal with the issues he identified as issues that were critical for the future of Latin America. And I think the main criticism will be that his social policies might not have been sustainable over the long term, given the way they were designed and the purpose that they were designed for. I think very few people will criticize the content of the policies, the fact that he's providing for education and health and access to food that in previous governments failed to do it. But I think that the criticism was that he did it with a political purpose. And the political purpose was to stay in office for as long as he could and also to undermine the opposition, which by and large is a democratic opposition, even though there are segments in the opposition that are not that democratic. But I think that will be his main criticism. And also that his rhetoric, both towards his domestic opponents and his international opponents, was too harsh and unnecessarily controversial. And to that extent, he failed to build that kind of political alliances that will make his social policies sustainable over the long term.
So, you know, on that note of kind of assessing how did it work out and how will it work out, how successful was the so-called Bolivarian Revolution at achieving its at least stated aims?
Not that much, really, in the sense that Chavez did what many other Latin American governments had been able to do in the last 10 years because of economic growth in general. Poverty has been reducing Venezuela. Income inequality has been reducing Venezuela. Many people left the ranks of the poor, but so did many other Latin American countries. So it wasn't a situation that happened only in Venezuela. It happened in many Latin American countries. And some Latin American countries, such as Chile and Brazil, were much successful than Chavez's regime in reducing poverty and income inequality. Now, so it's a question of whether we want to look at the glass half empty or half full. Yeah, he did accomplish certain goals, but so did other Latin American countries. So the question is to what extent his policies were the cause of those successes, or was more of a regional impact and the fact that Latin America has been experiencing a significant economic boom for the last 10 years. I mean, the region has grown dramatically, and that economic growth has impacted in levels of poverty and income inequality. So that would be my assessment.
Now, a lot of the criticism from the United States, and you mentioned some of his rhetoric against the opposition, is kind of framing him as a dictator or some, you know, strong man. And you mentioned that he had definitely tried to keep himself in power as a pretty major goal. In terms of how we would characterize it on the ground, was his government democratic? Was it popular but authoritarian? Was it some combination of that? Was the support kind of from the people, was that forced or exaggerated, or was there genuine support for him?
Well, his government wasn't peculiar to the extent that his government is representative of a number of governments in many other Latin American regions that exhibit similar characteristics. First of all, they have an electoral origin. So they come to power initially through free and fair elections, and they are very popular initially, and to a certain extent, they retain a degree of popularity throughout. The criticisms that are valid is that once in power, they change the rules of the games that enable them to get to power, and therefore they change and undermine democratic institutions with an aim in staying in power. And to a certain extent, they sometimes cross the line. And I do think that in the case of Venezuela, his regime, especially in the last 5 years, crossed the line, and it could not be characterized as a typical democracy. It wasn't a typical dictatorship either. I mean, he was popular. By the time of his passing, he retained more than 50% of popularity approval. He won elections, almost all of them but one. And it's likely that his successor will also win elections 4 weeks from now. But what it is clear is that his political party has full control of all political institutions. There is no surprise when the Supreme Court rules. We know he's going to rule in favor of the ruling party. He has full control of the legislature. And what is more worrisome is that he has attacked independent media in Venezuela, as other governments in Latin America have done from both the left and the right. So that's not, you know, a peculiarity. But I think that in many ways, Chavez resembles another president that I have studied very closely, who is Alberto Fujimori from Peru, even though they have different political persuasions. Alberto Fujimori was a right-wing autocrat. I will characterize Chavez as a more left-wing autocrat. He ruled with no check and balances, and I think that is a disservice not only to democracy but also to the poor, because many of his social programs are likely to be disbanded when his party leave power, because they will be associated with the regime. And so the sustainability of the programs are in risk because they are too tightly associated with the previous regime. Something that we don't see in other countries like Chile, where, for instance, after almost 15 years of socialist rule, the new government, the new president, somebody from the right, did not abolish those programs. In fact, also supported those programs. So I think that's an important factor to consider.
So I guess, you know, and as you're mentioning a lot of comparisons here, and of course you do teach comparative politics, so that makes sense. One of the things that I know that we've talked about previously on this show with some other professors that we've had on in the past is this kind of idea that in Europe there's been this convergence toward this sort of center-left, center-right, like shared agreement that within this range we all support these programs and their sustainability. But partly that's because after World War II they kind of took away that cult of personality type thing, that they didn't associate them with one person. Is the problem then in Latin America going to be that that in Venezuela and in some of these other governments, that the programs are still too closely associated with one ruler or one party, so that then as soon as the other party comes in, you have to, you know, sweep it from top to bottom to dismantle that.
That is exactly the problem in a country like Venezuela and another country like Ecuador. Whereas in other experiences of also left-wing presidencies like Lula in Brazil and Bachelet in Chile, those programs have remained in place after, certainly in Brazil they haven't left power yet, but nobody's challenging those programs because the PT, the Labor Party, who is now in its third term and is likely to win a fourth term, has respected the terms of the constitution and the rules of the game. And the opposition, both the social democratic and the right-wing opposition, recognize the legitimacy of the Lula and the PT government. And that was the case also in Chile. In Venezuela, on the other hand, that legitimacy was not acknowledged by the opposition, precisely because in many cases, Chavez use his popularity to undermine democratic institutions. And the most clear, or the clearest example of that, was the way in which he was able to change the constitution to abolish all term limits after he lost the only election that he ever lost. When people rejected that reform, he came back 1 year later and was able to finally squeezed a favorable vote to abolish term limits. And that obviously runs against all democratic criteria in the Latin American tradition.
Now, how do you think that his passing is likely to affect the pro-Chavez Bolivarian governments in the region, such as in Ecuador or Bolivia?
I think it raises the question of leadership. Maduro, his vice president, and who is running to replace for the presidency, is likely to be elected. I think Chavez retains a lot of support and popularity, and most people will vote for his name successor out of sympathy for Chavez. So Maduro is going to be the next president, I think, and he will try to replace Chavez as a regional leader. But he really lacks the leadership abilities and the personal qualities to fulfill that role. And so he will face a challenge, especially from Rafael Correa in Ecuador, who is a much more charismatic and to a certain extent shares many of the personality attributes that Chavez had, meaning a predilection for confrontation and controversial statements. So I think Venezuela risks leadership in this Bolivarian alliance because of the emergence of new presidents, especially Correa. On the other hand, Venezuela is still a rich country for Latin American terms, right? I mean, it's an oil-producing nation, so they have the power of the purse, so to speak.
Now, how do you think that the relationship is likely to change between some of these governments, such as the Correa government or the new government in Venezuela, with the United States or with Iran or with any of these other countries that they've been having all these major interactions with in the past several years?
Something that newspapers have not really noticed is how Maduro, even when he was acting president, approached the United States to improve relations. And I think that is a decision that has been made. And I think that relations with the United States in a Maduro administration will be better than had been with a Chavez administration. But on the other hand, we should not forget that these are, to a certain extent, rhetorical battles. I mean, in economic terms, the United States is the number one buyer of Venezuelan oil, and that Venezuela's economy pretty much relies on exports to the United States. So neither the United States nor the Venezuela government want a word of words that is going to get into the real issue of economic exchange.
Right, right? And the former congressman from Massachusetts, Joe Kennedy II, is still, long out of Congress now, still working on getting the Venezuelan oil to the low-income folks in
Boston.
In Boston, yeah. Right. And I still hear him on the radio talking about the, even as recently as a few weeks ago before Hugo Chavez had passed away, praising him and saying that he, thanks to the generosity of Citgo and the Venezuelan government, people aren't in the cold this winter.
Well, heating oil is very expensive in this country, right?
Right.
And that program has helped many poor neighborhoods in cities like Philadelphia and Boston. So, yeah.
Now, President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad from Iran was at the funeral for Hugo Chavez, and they had kind of formed a pretty, at least on the surface, a pretty mm-hmm. close relationship that I think probably was cause for concern in the United States and another reason to reject Chavez. Is that something that's likely to continue that relationship, or was that more of a just let's get together and annoy the United States?
Yeah, that's basically it. And Ahmadinejad is on his way out. You know, he's going to be no longer president by the end of this year. There will be a new president in Iran. To what extent that new president will be able to strike the personal relationship with the new Venezuelan president that he had with Chavez is open to question. I don't think it's going to be the same kind of relationship. Iran doesn't have a strategic interest in Latin America. Venezuela doesn't have any strategic interest in the Middle East. It was just a way of sticking it to the United States.
Now, President Chavez also spent much of his final months and much of his time while he was in office in general in Cuba, but most recently he was there for medical treatment. I mean, he had a really close relationship with Cuba and the Castro government there. Now, Cuba's regime benefited from that relationship as well, certainly, with the largesse coming from Venezuela. And that was especially helpful to them in the present period. Because they no longer have that lifeline that they used to a long time ago from the Soviet Union.
That's right.
How do you think that the passing of President Chavez is going to impact the Castros and the stability or economic security of their government?
Yeah. That's going to be a point of contention in Venezuela, especially within the ruling party, because Maduro is perceived as a Cuban man, as somebody who's very close to the Castros. And the other significant leader from the Chavista regime is Diosdado Cabello, leader of the National Assembly, who is perceived as a man from the military who is not that sympathetic to the Cubans. And that could be a source of contention, because I think Diosdado Cabello will look at the future, basically thinking, okay, after Maduro, whom? Is Maduro going to try to run for re-election as Chavez did, or is there going to be any room for me? Will I ever have the chance to be president of this country? So that's going to create a set of tension, and Cabello can easily use the Cuba issue as a wage issue within the ruling party, because not many people are happy of the Venezuelan largesse to Cuba, as you put it.
All right. Well, Dr. Julio Carrion is an associate professor of political science and international relations at the University of Delaware, and he's been speaking to us this week on the late President Hugo Chavez of Venezuela. Dr. Carrion, thanks very much for taking the time to talk to me.
Thank you for inviting me.